You're listening to Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Janaea Williams, in for Steve Chiatakis. Recently on this show, we shared a story about Angelenos who use speed friending, like platonic speed dating, as a way to connect. And it made us curious about the other ways people connect in this huge city. After all, friendships are crucial. Just last week, the U.S. Surgeon General warned that loneliness can pose a risk to your mental and physical health. So we asked you, listeners, how do you make friends in L.A.? And we heard from a lot of you. KCRW's Andrea Bautista went through your responses, and she's back with some tips. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Janaea.
Hi. So, Andrea, what did you learn?
Well, the overall feeling I got was that there are a lot of lonely people out there. Mm. And so I ended up reaching out to this woman who works at USC, and she's kind of this expert on connecting. Her name is Kat Moore, and her job title is Director of Belonging.
Wow.
Yeah. So she helps students who are struggling to find friends and community. And what she told me was that loneliness is a big problem, and the pandemic did not help.
I think we just have to accept that we're at a point in human history that we're going to have to be really proactive. That so many of the social structures that you're kind of describing that were just already baked into society, certain rhythms of gathering and seeing people face to face and the same people over long periods of time, most of those have been liquefied. And so then we're like, well, now what? Because most of us were not explicitly taught how to make a friend.
Right. Like she said, we really aren't taught explicitly how to make friends. Usually it just happens in social settings. But what happens if you don't have that? Does she suggest anything?
Yeah. So she shared a number of tips. One of the first easy steps is just sitting in a public space like a coffee shop or a park.
I think just putting yourself in social environments, even if you don't make a commitment to like say hi to 10 people or whatever, like you decide what your own next doable step is, but at least give yourself a regular opportunity to be in public.
Yeah, so I really like this advice. It's so great for introverts, and I definitely relate as an introvert myself.
Same.
And so tip number two is to take stock of the connections you already have. Maybe they've gotten stalled somewhere. Is there a potential to make it deeper? So invite someone to get coffee or just show some amount of vulnerability, really, to see if that's a person who can meet you there. Tip number three, let's say you're not quite ready to bare your soul to someone over coffee, and that's totally fine, too. The next time you want to hang out with someone, maybe go do an activity together instead where you're side by side. You're not staring into each other's eyes. Like, you can do yoga or even community service.
Right.
Tip number four seems like a no-brainer, but deep friendships take time. So here's what Moore has to say.
Sustaining relationships is almost entirely about regular communication. So in between hanging out or whatever, having some kind of ability to text people, call people, email people, let people know that out of sight is not out of mind.
Right. And I tend to be guilty of doing this sometimes.
I think we all are a little bit.
Yeah. So I'll definitely.
Life gets busy.
Yeah, it does. And I'm definitely going to try applying that to my own life. So the last tip that she has is to take stock of your values. What keeps you up at night? You know, what causes are important to you? And then join groups around those values. And that gives you just this automatic common ground with other people. And you end up having like a stronger bond at the bat just because your values are the same.
I like that. This is all amazing, excellent advice. What about our KCRW listeners? What did you hear from them about how they make friends in L.A.?
Yeah, so I talked to two listeners who have very different strategies. I'll start with Luisa Caceres. She's originally from New York. She really did not want to move to L.A., but one of her friends recommended that once she got out here that she join the Venice Run Club. And Luisa's the first to admit that she's not a great runner, but she found that joining the club for her worked.
I did find people who do other physical activities, from surfing to, you know, tennis, whichever. But then also, again, I like play backgammon, or we'll go hiking, or we'll camp together, go to Yosemite for the first time. I went to Coachella for the first time. Listen to music with people who I connected from that run club.
Yeah, so Luisa really credits the group with helping her create a community in LA, and she was also able to create even deeper friendships.
Right. That seems like the one about taking stock of your values.
Yeah.
Physical recreation, she found another group of like-minded people.
Yeah, she
Amazing. Seems like a good idea.
Yeah. And our other listener had a different approach. Her name is Emily Avila. She recently moved back to LA from Atlanta, and she was also in this space where she was feeling pretty lonely. Mm-hmm. So she made a TikTok where she shared how hard it was to make friends as an adult. And of course, that TikTok got a lot of attention. People left comments that they felt the same way. So she decided to organize a meetup. And the first one she put together, about 40 people came. Mm-hmm. And the second one, actually, over 100 people showed up.
Wow.
Yeah. So this group is called LA Friends. And Emily says she's really happy to see her group working. And here's what she had to say about that.
Sometimes our friends are our family. You know, the people that we choose to be our friends. And I want that for everybody. Everybody deserves a friend.
I like that. Everybody does deserve a friend. And I hope you make one too. We'll have all this advice up on our website. Thanks, Andrea.
Thanks, Jania.
I've been talking with KCRW reporter Andrea Bautista.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Janaea Williams, and we're boarding a Greyhound bus bound for St. Louis. The driver's welcome message is a little different from the one we might hear if we were flying.
We're going to St. Louis. That's the next stop. Everybody understand that? Anybody going past St. Louis?
Yes, sir.
I pulled your ticket for that, and you have a ticket in your possession that says Kansas City. Is that correct?
Yes.
You're sure? Yes, we do.
Yes.
All right. No smoking on this bus of anything of any type. Everybody clear on that?
Yes.
No drugs, no dope, no alcohol, no nothing that ain't legal. You clear on that? If something ain't legal, you're going to have to find another way to get to your destination. Be clear on that?
Yes.
Uncle Sam's serious, I'm serious. I do not like my trips interrupted by somebody who didn't follow the rules.
Well, that trip to St. Louis was only one of a whole lot of trips made by singer-songwriter Doug Levitt. Over 12 years, he says he's traveled 120,000 miles by Greyhound all over the country. He met and talked with a lot of fellow travelers over the course of those years and miles, and he's memorialized some of them in song on his debut album, The Edge of Everywhere. It drops this Friday, and Doug Levitt is noodling on the guitar here in the studio with me right now. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Janaea. Thank you.
So before you earned your frequent flyer card on Greyhound, or frequent rider, I should say,
right.
You worked as a journalist, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's no elite class on Greyhound, unfortunately. I'd been a foreign correspondent based out of London, mm-hmm. and I covered sort of conflict zone type places. I went to Rwanda, I went to Bosnia, mm-hmm. I went to Iran. And then, you know, as you do, I became a singer-songwriter because that's just, you know.
That's the next step.
That's the next step. I mean, that's what everybody does. And so I returned to the States, and I was really struck by the level of disparity in America. Having lived overseas for about 5 years, of course, I was coming back. And I knew that America was in a kind of flexion point. And I felt like, what could I do, if anything? And I was fleeing from a failed engagement, and I had some things going on. And I felt like I was inspired by Woody Guthrie. And so I set out with a guitar and with Woody Guthrie's Bound for Glory. And I began writing songs and stories about folks along the way.
And what do you remember from your very first trip?
I remember the first guy I spoke to, he had just come back from Iraq. Mm. And he told me that when he was a kid, that he was a knucklehead, that his mom, like, he was in the principal's office every day. And then when he got to be like 16, his mom said, I'm done. Like, you're going to your dad. And he said, my daddy was backwards. He said, he didn't play. He said, one time I tried to, I was on the porch and tried to hit him. Next thing I knew, I was off the porch and coming to. And he said, boy, if you're dumb enough to swing at your daddy, I will kill you. And, but he sort of straightened up and he kind of signed up for the 2 weeks, you know, 1 weekend a month, reserve plan. And next thing you know, he was in Iraq, and he sort of described returning from Iraq, and they were in Arkansas, and he said, we left the bus, and he said, you know, I swear all of Arkansas was there. Private Simmons is his name. He said it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. He said, I'll tell my grandkids about it. It was the high point of my life. We had rehearsed to get out in a single line, but when they said we was relieved, I'm quoting him, he said, we all started running across the field to where our families was. And he said, there was a big wall right there. And he said, and I jumped as high as I could, but didn't make it. And he said, then all I remember was this big arm grabbing me. And he said, it was my daddy. And he said, my daddy never cried or told me he loved me, nothing like that. It was just his way of being backwoods. And he said, but he put me in his arms and crying, he said, today, I'm the most proudest man in the world, and I love you. And Private Simmons said, I felt 10 foot tall and bulletproof that day. I still get chill bumps thinking about it.
Wow, that's quite a conversation. Do you remember the first song you wrote on the album after a conversation with a fellow traveler?
Yeah, I started writing a song that ended up being a kind of reflection of the entire journey. Mm-hmm. But along the way, you know, I met a guy who was turning himself into federal prison. I met him in Amarillo at 3 a.m. and he initially ended up in jail for graffiti. He met some dude there who said you can make a lot of money carrying guns and drugs from the border. He did. He got caught. He ended up in prison. And then he violated parole by smoking weed, and he went on the run, and he went to Wisconsin, started to work in a cow farm. And he said he loved the work in the cow farm, and he met his wife, who was very Christian, and they have 2 daughters. And he said, we just felt like I wanted to show my daughters the right way and to kind of live up to your mistakes.
The first thing I carried was spray paint cans. Graffiti was my thing. They put me in a pen. I met a drug lord, and then he asked me if I'd bring drugs, guns, people from the border. I can make 30,000 on an order, but I'm on my way to turn myself in to federal prison. I'm turning myself in. Tired of running.
And so he took a bus from Wisconsin all the way to Texas, and he was like, this is probably the last cigarette I have while I'm out. And so I wrote a song about that called Turning Myself In. And you know, you could tell by these stories, they're so affecting.
Right.
And they really cut to the core of the human experience. And so that's what kept me going. And that's what keeps me going still, because, you know, America, it is true that people who travel by Greyhound, it's everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it courses through American society, our veterans, people with addiction, single parents, you name it. But at the same time, it's folks who are living in the margins, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't get as much attention just by virtue of not necessarily being, you know, around media or mm-hmm. or other things that are going to give a focus to people.
So what's your process? How do you go about writing a song that's based on a conversation that you had with someone? Is it all their story? How much do you add to it?
It's all their story. And in fact, in a few cases, I've been able to share the songs with those individuals. And, you know, it's, there's a real charge and responsibility because you're dealing with, you know, a guy who became a friend of mine, Hector, who whose son was shot in the head by an errant bullet. And to sing a, to play a song or write a song about that, you want to get it right. You want to be true to the emotional core of it and that person. And when I shared that song with him, it's called Run It All Back. He gave me a hug and he was like, his dad had actually, ministered to folks in prison. And one of the prisoners had written a song for Hector's dad. And so, you know, in the Mexican American and Mexican tradition, a corrido is a story song. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, now I have my corrido.
A neighbor said something happened to your son. It was a car chase and the shooting just begun. When my boy had gone to the window to see, and I would give anything, I would give anything, I would give anything to run it all back.
To your question, which is a really good question, there are songs that are kind of an amalgam of the experience that kind of speak to the broader sense of the journey and people's journeys. But when I'm writing an individual song, it's very much just their story. And I try to do it quickly because it's, you know, the feeling.
Well, it's fresh.
Yeah, the feeling state is there. Yeah. And, you know, again, I don't want to kind of overwhelm with stories, but there's another guy who had just gotten out of prison, Tony, who, you know, told me, like, that is everything I own in my bag. He's like, when I come back, he was doing some work training, I'm leaving it all behind. Clothes, habits, this is my metamorphosis. And then we stayed in touch, and I was just in his place in Galveston, Texas, and with his woman. He's now got this woman. They've got this blended family.
Amazing.
Amazing. And I played the song for them. And while I was playing the song for them in their place, they actually kissed one another. Like, this was a special moment. So it's just, it's incredibly powerful. And I don't know how the hell I'm going to end it. Like, it's too.
Well, I was going to ask. I can see the appeal of doing it for a little while. These are great stories, but 12 years, 120,000 miles. What keeps you coming back to doing these?
Well, it's that in a way, it's there to be done. You know, it's there to be done. It is my skill set. And along the way, I'll perform in everything from prisons and shelters and VAs to, you know, Lincoln Center, the Kennedy Center, Woody Guthrie Center. Basically any center. If it's a center,
you're there.
Just give me a center. It doesn't really matter. And so it just feels like it's very much, I guess, my not to sound self-important, but my purpose.
So you have your guitar with you. We heard a little bit earlier. Can you play us a song from the album?
Sure. Thanks for asking. this is one of those songs that's a bit of an amalgam kind of song.
Okay.
And it's about my experience too. Because to be, you know, fully transparent, I also I've been going through a process of coming to terms with my father's suicide. And I found that people telling me their stories, you know, you're just naturally going to tell them. It's because you're sharing. Mm-hmm. And in that process, I realized that, you know, in a sense, we learn from each other how to forgive ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so this song is about the journey. It's called Highway Signs.
Mm-hmm. sun and Mars all merge into one, run into ourselves in this life on the run. He stretches life shaped down, he stretches a rope, light in the way, they light on the low. Tennessee, I didn't know then how these stories spoke to me. That's how I began to see these highway signs, yeah. Tale of so many others just threaded through me. Strangers trading on their way to be free. And now I see out of the desert and into the mountains of Tennessee. I didn't know then how these stories spoke to me. It's how I began to see these highway signs. Yeah, they took me all the way through. They led me all the way through. They took me all the way through. They led me all the way through. Out of the desert and into the into the rain-soaked city streets. I didn't know then how these stories spoke to me. It's how I began to see these highway signs, yeah, yeah. Oh, they took me all the way through. They led me all the way.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Doug Levitt's new album is Edge of Everywhere. It'll be available starting Friday. Thank you so much for being
Thanks,
here.
Man. I really appreciate it. Great talking to you.
Even more now with Greater LA here on KCRW. I'm Janaea Williams.
With tuppence for paper and strings, you can have your own set of wings. With your feet on the ground, you're a bird in flight. With your fist holding tight to the string of your kite. Oh.
Yes, we're talking kites to close out today's show. specifically the 3rd annual People's Kite Festival. It's happening this Saturday in L.A. State Historic Park, just north of Chinatown, and it's put on by the community group Clock Shop. Picture a big green field full of kids and adults and dozens of colorful kites zipping around in the sky. Sounds pretty great, right? Well, with me to discuss this weekend's high-flying event is Sue Bell Yank, the executive director of Clock Shop. Hey, Sue.
Hi.
So tell me a little bit about Clock Shop and what your group does.
Sure. So Clock Shop really exists to bring together communities in public land through arts and cultural events, really to inspire a future vision of our city as one where people feel very connected to the place that they live in and can come together, you know, in these joyful circumstances.
That's nice. So how did the Kite Festival come about?
Well, it's really a perfect example of what we do. You know, it's a great way to bring communities together on public land through a very accessible and joyful arts and cultural event. And really, you know, the purpose of that is to form an emotional connection to place and a sense of belonging.
Amazing. So I hear that there will be master kite flyers there this weekend. So what does it take to become a master at kite flying?
Well, we have some incredible folks there, Stevie Choi, Dajin Yoon, and Scott Skinner. Stevie Choi has been someone who's been studying with Korean artisan kite makers in Korea, creating kites herself, and then, you know, becoming a kite-making educator. And the other kite masters, same with them, doing just amazing work around educating both how to, you know, the craft of making kites, but also techniques in flying them and flying different kinds of kites. It's a really varied art form.
Wow. So this is pretty serious. So what else can people expect to see?
Well, we'll have some great arts workshops. So we have Noon Tran, who's going to be doing a natural dyeing workshop, cyanotype with Misa Chan, who also designed a specialty kite for the event, and creating native California paper flowers for Mother's Day with Zochi Manazia.
Sounds beautiful. So some of the kites from previous years are really elaborate. Like I'm looking at a picture and there's one that's like a giant black octopus. It's maybe like 20 feet long. It has all these multicolored tentacles like green and orange. It's like really something to see. Do you have any favorite kites from previous years?
Yes. Well, I mean, our Los Angeles community of kite flyers is incredible. So, you know, people will bring their own kites out, make their own kites. I loved seeing some of the handmade kites that came out last year. And as I mentioned, we also commission an artist to create a kite. So this year we commissioned artist Misa Chan, who created a kite with the phrase "land is kin" on it and created out of cyanotyping of native flowers. Really a beautiful kite made, you know, of bamboo and paper. So I think it's an art form that speaks to many, many different communities. And it's wonderful to see what people bring to the park.
And how's the weather looking this weekend? Are you going to have the wind you need to get those kites up and going?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the amazing thing about L.A. State Historic Park is that you feel those trade winds coming through in the afternoons. And it should be windy. It should be sunny and really just a beautiful day.
Perfect. That's perfect for kite flying. Sue Bell Yank is the executive director of Clock Shop. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
If you'd like more information on this weekend's event, head on over to our website, kcrw.com/GLA. That's all the time we have for today. It's been such a joy joining you for GLA this week. Tomorrow, Luis Alfaro will be in the host chair with a show devoted to the LA theater scene, including a local indigenous playwright who has her latest play on Broadway, and a new generation of Asian American theater is happening. That's coming up tomorrow on GLA. Tell us what's on your mind, share a story idea with us, and get the podcast. It's easy. Just go to kcrw.com/GLA or get the podcast wherever you get them by searching KCRW Greater LA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Katie Gilchrist, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordal all helped put the show together this evening. I'm Janaea Williams. Thank you so much for your time and have a great night.